Hey, it's me, James Stacy, and today I'm joined by Nick and Danny for a chat about the latest new models from Omega. Nick and I are fresh back from a press trip to Miami so that we could see and go hands-on with all of the new stuff, and that's everything from the Ultra Deep to new Aquaterras, Gold Speedies, and a bunch more. And hey, my Miami tan is fading at a record pace, so let's get to it. Okay, right from the top, I do think some disclosure is warranted, as the Hodinkee Shop is an authorized dealer of Omega and will most certainly be carrying a selection of the watches discussed in today's episode. That being said, as always, we maintain and enjoy complete editorial independence. With that out of the way, Nick, Danny, thanks so much for being on the show. You guys ready to talk some Omega?
Let's do it, James.
Wow. Same wavelength there, Mr. Marino.
That's how ready we are, bro.
So we've got it's a little bit of a later show. Nick and I are on what we'll call a modified schedule because we were in Miami for the earlier part of this week. This episode will come out on Monday. So last week, anyone who follows the site will notice a bunch of new exciting stuff from Omega got posted. And that's because they kind of do their own show now. They call it Omega Days. I think they've been doing it since 2020, maybe even 2019. But the Swatch group for US moved to Miami. So that's now where they do these big things. And so instead of doing a Watches and Wonders or anything like that, they do their own. And that's what Nick and I just got back from. We had a couple of days to see the new pieces and take pictures and the rest of it. And the interesting thing, I didn't actually know this, Nick, maybe you did, but when we were sitting there at the kind of the one of the main presentations, I realized that they were saying that they did the exact same sort of press junket in four locations, all timed at the same time.
I didn't know they were doing that either, but it's clearly a strategy on Omega's part to differentiate themselves from the pack. So here we are.
Well, it's a big thing because I think you have a huge watch company, like one of the biggest watch companies in the world. And for years, they've shared their news in the news cycle that's the most saturated and busy and kind of like the heaviest traffic that happens in the industry. And by doing this a couple weeks earlier on their own, they kind of get everyone's attention. And thankfully, they didn't waste anybody's attention because they launched a pretty wide spread of stuff. There's a little bit of something from every little corner of Omega. Anything stand out for you guys?
Well, I just want to say first, it was raining and snowing and all kinds of cold, wet things in New York. So, you know, thanks for the invite to Miami, guys. Really, really appreciate it over here.
For sure, for sure, for sure. No, it was nice. The weather down there was amazing. Obviously, it's Miami. It's great.
It looked great. You guys look extra tan.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say for me, I think it's the obvious one. It's the Moonshine Gold Speedmaster.
Okay, we can start there because we have published the hands-on for that, which that was the one that kind of like knocked my socks off. I'm not crazy about chronographs like in general. They're not the first thing my brain goes to for a watch that I would want to own. But when it's done right, they just hit something really special. And for me, a precious metal Speedmaster is like pretty sweet. And then to see it finally, because we've seen in the past, we've seen the Sedna Gold, which is their rose gold or red gold version. And then recently saw the Canopus Gold, which is their proprietary in-house. This will be a theme. You'll notice they're doing a lot of their own metals, right? And this is something that's been building for years. And now we'll get to this watch in a moment, but they are now doing their own steel as well, which is a pretty impressive feat to take on for a brand of any size, especially a brand that produces this many steel watches. So be interested to see where that goes. But for these Speedies, bracelet or rubber, they're doing a kind of a champagne-y gold with a black subdial, so like a panda, or the green. I couldn't get enough of these. Super fun.
I love the impracticality of it. To me, the more impractical the watch, the better. I'm sort of the anti-tool watch point of view on this, I guess. I guess the way I approach watches in general is that the whole thing is unnecessary.
Yeah.
So let's take its unnecessariness to its logical conclusion and make something that's just fun, that's just beautiful, that's just provocative, that's just, you know, that it exists for its own sake. You made a point in your hands-on, James, that there's no performance value in this versus the same piece in gold. It's gold because you want to wear gold. Like, to me, that is sufficient.
Right. Again, back to the alloys. It's a moonshine gold. So we've seen the other two versions. Now we have the yellow gold. For me, I loved the one that they showed in 2019, the commemorative version of the Apollo 11 watch. So the 50th anniversary Apollo 11 one, which had the black onyx dial furniture and the gold dial and all of those are knockout watches. But this is somehow feels like more Speedmastery, especially the Panda. and then the you know, the bracelet with the upgraded clasp and then the option of the rubber really kind of seals the deal. I think there's a style there, and it's still a Speedy, and it's the same size, and it's got a 3861 now. Yeah, I dig these a lot. Danny, you green or gold?
Gold. Gold all day. And it's because of the legibility. I think the one thing that got me with the Sedna Gold for me, love it, but it's very hard to read. And, you know, that's not what I want in a watch anytime. And I think that the green dial tracks a little more with the aesthetic vibe of that watch, in the sense that it's a very dark green. There's very low contrast. And I love that they went with a classic champagne with contrasting black subsidiary dials, which is just, that's easy to read. And it kind of, it feels a little bit like a modern interpretation of the hyper limited 50th anniversary moonwatch, the one that was famously gifted to the Apollo astronauts, the one that President Nixon also famously turned down. So that's sort of the dream Speedmaster. And this is about as close as you get to that in regular production.
Yeah. Aside from that one that they put out in 2019,
exactly, which I think also, you can't, you know,
sold yeah. immediately, gone. Everybody loves them.
Mere mortals aren't getting yeah. that watch.
A gold Speedy is just a fun thing.
James, I don't know if you noticed this, but Reynald, the sort of big boss at Omega, was wearing a beautiful jacket and tie, fully dressed up for his big day. And he had this gold Speedmaster on the rubber strap with his jacket and tie. That was a surprise to me to see that he went with the rubber strap on, but it looked absolutely fabulous.
Yeah, I'm always interested to see what CEOs will decide to wear on launch day, because they have to pick. They got to pick a kid. Mm-hmm. Which one's my favorite, right? And I absolutely agree with the direction he selected, but I wouldn't have been surprised to see him in the Aquaterra or the new 57. Like they had a handful of stuff that kind of feels pretty strongly in his zone. But yeah, the full suit, you know, he was coming in via Zoom from Switzerland, and yeah, he's always well dressed, very stylish guy, and then he just locked it in with that watch, and it's one of those times where like you get used to what Zooms look like. I'm looking at it now, the resolution comes in and out. They had a beautiful setup with a huge screen, and it felt a little bit bigger than even having Reynald in the room. But you could see the watch on full display. I can't fault that choice, certainly.
To clarify, I wasn't surprised that he chose the gold Speedy. I was surprised that he chose the rubber strap, and I think it's a testament to the strap quality, which to me is sort of a little bit of a secret weapon of Omega's right now. When they're not on bracelets, when they are on straps, whether it's, you know, rubber or some type of NATO, their stuff's just better than most.
Yeah, they do make a solid rubber strap.
Yeah. You know, it doesn't feel like it just came off a dive boat. You know, there's a weird sort of elegance and pliability to that rubber that's it's closer to leather, at least optically, and also in the hand, than I think you might expect.
Yeah, and Nick, for you, green or gold for the dial? Because I still can't decide.
Oh, gold. Yeah. I mean, gold. Yeah, it's just, I think you go all the way in.
You wrist modeled it too. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, beautifully.
Don't know, in the article, that is Nick Marino's wrist.
Yeah, a commenter very accurately said the watch looks a little too big. It's a 42, and I start getting nervous around 38. Around 38. So, no one ever accused me of being a large man, but hell, I'd wear it anyway. It's great. It's a great watch.
Yeah. The other thing people should keep in mind is when you see a shot from a press trip or something and it's on a bracelet, that bracelet's not sized. I literally had like balled up a little glove and crammed it in behind Nick's wrist. And he's just doing his best to make sure it looks straight to the camera. It doesn't look right on anyone's wrist. And I'm not sure the size would have made a big difference. It, you know, the Speedies, especially with the recent updates, the updates that we saw when they went to the 3861, are pretty wearable. You know, that's a little over 13 millimeters. It's 42 wide, but some of that's case, some of it's bezel, and then it's got a nice big dial. So I think it is one of those watches where even people who might start to doubt where they're going to land above 38, it can work. I didn't think it looked too big.
Whoever it was that said that, if you thought that was big, wait till you see the photos of me wearing the...
Oh, yeah. Let's go to the next watch.
Wearing the Seamaster Planet Ocean Ultra Deep, which is a truly gigantic watch.
Yeah, yeah. So let's make the jump to that, because that's probably the one that most people... I don't know if it's the one that people will be thinking about in, say, a year from now, from the releases that came out this time, but it's the one that had the most kind of buzz behind it, because it is, in a few different ways, a really crazy thing to have come to market, period. So they make two versions of it, and they're actually different sizes in terms of lug to lug. So there's a titanium version that's very similar to the concept watch that Victor Vescovo strapped to a submarine and then took down, you know, to the bottom of the Marianas Trench back in 2019. And so they've commercialized that design. And I think it's a gorgeous watch, but it is in no way. It's like half the time when I write about a 43, 44 millimeter watch, I might go, oh, you'd be surprised. It wears a little smaller than you. No. This one wears every millimeter of what they tell you. So it's their 45.5 wide, which is a normal size for Planet Oceans. And then it's 18.12 millimeters thick, which is very thick. And then keep in mind, this thing has channel lugs. They call them manta lugs. They don't actually close all the way, but you have to wear it with a NATO. So you're adding the thickness of the strap as well. They're offering it on a recycled NATO with a black and blue sort of colorway, which matches the watch really well. And then there's a steel version, which is a little shorter lug to lug. It's like about 52 millimeters lug to lug, but otherwise the dimensions are the same. And the big things here is, one, it's a huge watch. It's based on something that they've worked on before, this watch, the original Alter Deep concept. But then it's 6,000 meters, which is 20,000 feet. The other big dive watch in the room would be the Rolex Deep Sea, which is 3,900 meters. So think about that. If you've ever had a Deep Sea on, that's a big watch, right? And to take it another, you know, 2,100 meters is not insignificant. There's a lot of dive watches that don't come anywhere near 2,000 meters. And we're just stacking it on top. I think this watch really is like a testament to how far Omega has come in the last decade in terms of being the leader in technology in high-end watchmaking. Like maybe if you get to a Richard Mille or something very high, Grubel Forzi, something very high-end, you'll get into a different type of watchmaking. But I mean like the application of all sorts of different technologies and materials to take the boundaries a little further. Is this their most commercial Planet Ocean? No. Is it really cool that they decided to make this? It took them years and years. They ended up making a new steel because 316L isn't enough for this watch. The watch would have had to be even bigger to have enough steel to stand up to 7.5 tons of pressure on the crystal when they pressure test it, because it's ISO certified in-house by Metas. They had to make a machine capable of making that much pressure. And then if you know the 6425, you have to overtest. So if you claim 6,000 meters, you have to take it to 7,500.
Who's wearing this, James, in your mind?
Oh, it's for big dive watch guys.
Okay. So basically, do you think you might see, I don't know, next time you're in Miami walking around South Beach, is there going to be somebody walking around with this? Like
a football player.
Yeah.
A Schwarzenegger. Jason Heaton loves it. Johnny Lieberman, he was on the last episode. Those big, big dive watch guys.
I guess I'll take this time to shout out my boy, Mitchell Schwartz, and just say, if you're listening, which I think you are, Mitch, I'd love to see you wearing this watch. It'd be very cool.
And that world has been like, it's less of the core of dive watch enthusiasm right now, a big dive watch, but it's been the history for the last 20 years is Panerais and big Breitlings and big Omegas, 40, like I said, 45.5, and is common to them. And they even made the point of saying that the, Planet Ocean Chrono is thicker than this watch, right? And then they go to the extent of the steel. And the steel, I didn't like it as much as the titanium. Nick, I think I remember you saying the same. The titanium just, it's so cool that it looks so much like the concept one. That speaks to the five-year-old in me that loves submarines and the rest of it. But the steel, they had to create their own steel. It's called Omega Steel. I'm going to, you know, just hate typing this out for the rest of my life, but it's okay. It's O-Mega Steel. So it's Omega Steel, but also O and then like Mega Steel. I hope that made that as complicated as possible for everyone listening.
One more time, James.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah.
Please.
I'll say it a bunch, I'm sure. Yeah. And
so Mega, right?
Mega. Yeah, Mega. Mega's in there. Yeah. And hit the show notes. Anyways, the the steel is more elastic than 316L. So there's something called like a yield rating or a... And it's the tendency for the metal to be able to deform without the deformation becoming permanent. If you're a material science guy in our audience, I'm really sorry, because that's probably a huge simplification. So Omega Steel has a yield rating much more similar to titanium, whereas 316L apparently will crush or deform permanently. And that's where you see these awesome pressure test videos online and the case backs fail. That's a thin piece of metal and they crush in and usually take the movement with them. And that's the end of the watch. In this case, it's a two-piece patented case-back design, also an Omega Steel or titanium on the titanium model. They have a patent for the crown. They have a patent for the crystal, the edge of the shape of the crystal. And it's the gasket for the crystal is also brand new. Those of you who are into the original Alter Deep will remember they use liquid metal to essentially create a bonding gasket. But the issue is that isn't a good thing to do if you have to service the watch every now and then. because you have to destroy that whole thing to do it. So for a concept, fine. But they had to go ahead and figure out essentially how to industrialize that to the point that it maintains their warranty and can be serviced like a normal watch and gasket. Check the story, but these also use essentially the highest end sapphire crystal that's possible. But basically, they can't use a normal sapphire because they all of them have small imperfections that you can't see and don't matter unless you put them under incredible pressure and then they fail. So they had to use this specialty type of sapphire crystal, which isn't common at all in watchmaking, although has been around since the 60s, to my understanding. Nick, what else kind of stood out? I mean, it's on the bracelet, they're crazy heavy, right? You got to be like an Arnold or like for this to really fit like the way I would expect a watch to fit my wrist. They're big.
They're huge. But again, the hugeness to me is part of the charm in the way that the goldness is part of the charm on the Speedies. I mean, let's just try some stuff. You know, I love that they're not being conservative with either of these pieces. And it's an audacious piece of performance hardware, even if none of us will ever use it for that. And kind of a big flex from an engineering standpoint. You know, if it were 10 millimeters smaller,
right,
it might fit better on my arm, but it wouldn't be the same watch.
If they were able to do that, that would be the invention of the century, to have some kind of like 36 millimeter planted. I mean, that would be insane. One day.
Without oil filled, it probably can't be done, right?
Right, exactly.
Like what Zen and Bell and Ross were into for a while. You know, the other thing that stands out for me is, keep in mind that this is part of the Planet Ocean lineup, and they have stuff that goes all the way down to 37.7.
Right.
So it's not like they're making a watch. I think it'd be cool to see the aesthetic of the titanium Ultra T come to other watches. I really like the Grade 5 titanium. It's Omega. They do a beautiful job sandblasting it. It's really even and it soaks up light. And then they have a brushed finish on the bezel. And the two things together, I kind of couldn't stop looking at. And when I edit the images, I keep kind of just fading off, looking at the interplay between. You know, they've really dialed back how shiny any of it is, but they didn't do so without leaving any texture. You can still tell it's like a higher end watch. It doesn't feel like Teflon.
It's titanium for me.
Yeah.
I think that's a good point. I think that actually goes to just Omega generally. I mean, they do the same kind of thing with gold a lot, where they opt for a brushed finish almost exclusively. And same with steel, where the accents and the beveling are not contrasted by polishing. They're just done at such a high level where they can brush the whole thing, and it actually makes the product look way more interesting. And I think Omega doesn't get enough credit for that. I haven't seen this watch in person, but having seen other pieces just at a similar vein, I think for sure. And I also appreciate how this really, you know, beefy watch like this maintains the general aesthetic of the Planet Ocean line, you know, just across the board, all the way down to the 37 millimeter Planet Ocean, which is a watch that I've toyed around with buying a million times in my life, because 37 millimeter diver is a cool thing that not a lot of people are doing.
And yeah, and so with these, they're offering them, like I said, in steel with the rubber, steel with a bracelet, or this one titanium SKU. In total, I guess it's seven SKUs with the titanium, and they range from like $11,200 to about $12,600 for the titanium. So right within shooting distance of a Deep Sea, you can tell the market that exists around these watches from this level of company is kind of already solidified by the players that are already in the market. And I would say, you know, if there's more you want to know about it, my hands-on will go up a few hours after this episode comes live on Monday morning. So check that out. And if you have a question, drop it in the comments and I'll take a look. But I think that's probably, I've written two stories and I've now talked about it at length. So maybe we go to another one. Danny, what would you pick one on the list?
I guess since we've covered a Speedy already and there's one on the menu, let's not talk about that one next and go to the Aquaterras. I think it's the multicolored elephant in the room and worth kind of getting into.
These are seriously nice watches in person.
For sure.
And it comes down to what we were just talking about. And I think Nick would agree. You're talking about the way that Omega understands like a brushed finish and the way that it plays with light. These watches, almost all of them, it depends on the color. So again, hit the show notes if you want the specifics, but almost all of them use a PVD coating that's then lacquered. And the result of these really rich colors that still have all of the grain of the finishing from the metal, the sunburst finish is still there. And the red is like, it's like Gibson guitar red, like it's iridescent. You'd almost expect it to have like a tiger stripe in it or something. They're really nice. And the bracelets, they've modified the bracelet in a few different ways. And it just wears really nicely. Nick, what'd you think of these? You enjoyed the 34 as well, eh?
Yeah, that's the point I wanted to make is that, as we have established here, I'm a small man. And in more ways than one, some might say. The 34 is just awesome. It's the one I would wear for sure, rather than the 38. And not to make some kind of statement. I mean, I just genuinely think it looks better on me. It feels better on me. Some of the colors are pretty similar to the 38s. And some are off doing their own thing. But the 34 is the true sleeper of all of these releases, I think.
Sounds like we're going to have to do a rehash of the article we did on the OPs and do a little color chart, which color goes with which size, because it sounds like they don't match completely, is my understanding of these.
No, it's different colors, yeah, across the two size ranges. The other thing that comes up with the color, and we can even tie this back to the Ultra Deep, some of the criticism I've seen online is like that they're kind of chasing what Rolex had already done. And for the Ultra Deep with the blue to black gradient dial, I absolutely agree. I don't really know why, of all the colors in the world, they chose to go that route, because that's one of the only, you know, colorways of the Deep Sea is very similar. For these don't feel to me like OPs. It's not a heavily saturated color. It's a color that kind of shines almost like a glass or the lacquered finish. And it's not the same thing. I've seen a couple of the colorful OPs in person. And these don't have any of the like Stella dial vibe. Like there's no, it's not the same like level of saturation.
Yeah, I would say it's clearly a direct competitor, but it's also a real choice in the way that Coke and Pepsi actually don't taste like each other, even though they're both colas. You know, I mean, they're going head to head with the OP, no question about that. But the customer still has a real choice. Plus, these have the date windows, you know, like it or not, some people will want that. So it is a genuine choice and not just in no way is it a knockoff.
I appreciate the Aquaterras more than I think I ever have, especially now that they have this new 34 millimeter variant, because to me it represents the core origins of Seamasters, especially at a 34 millimeter sizing. Like that's where the Seamasters began. They were not dive watches with dive bezels. They were actually mass market takes on field watches, on military field watches. And so this feels much more in tune or in line with that concept in a modern package to me.
And I think the other thing that you have to also remember, if you want to try and put Omega on the competition field and just start trying to compare apples to apples as much as possible, you know, these are $5,700 roughly in each size bracelet, I think takes you up to $6,000-ish. You know, for that money, you're getting an 8,000 series movement. It's an 8,800 movement in these. So you get the date, you get a good power reserve, and it's Meta's Master certified. So you get the crazy anti-magnetic protection. You get bi-directional winding. You get the SI-14 balance spring. Like these aren't a casual movement. When you get into this price point with Omega, you're getting, you know, one of the cream of the crop movements that they put out there. And to see that go into even watches like the 34, where traditionally you might see other companies cut corners.
Yeah, that's very true.
You know, to put the entry-level movement or the blended off-the-shelf movement in the entry-level one that might be more for a female buyer. Like, I think they're taking this very seriously. They had a lot of questions in our Q&A session about how they're approaching the sort of genderization of even the watches like the ATs. And they're very clear, like, these should be made for whoever likes the size, that's the one for you. So they're not cutting corners just because the 41 is traditionally the popular one and they don't know how good the 34 will be, which I kind of find pretty refreshing. I mean, if you're going to spend that kind of money, you want the whole deal, the whole Omega kind of effect of it all.
Couldn't agree more.
And yeah, if you want to see images of these watches on my wrist and on Nick's wrist, get an idea for the size and the rest of it. You can even compare against the 42 millimeter Speedy if you want. Just stay tuned. This coming week, you'll have a hands-on story. It's a lot of photos to rip through and I think people will really dig it. Let's see, next up on the list. So let's jump back to the Diver, because this is one that I was really surprised by. You know, green is a color, you know, obviously it's a color they've put on several of the watches we've already spoken about, but now they've got a Diver 300 meters. So that's the Bond style Diver, but with a really nicely matched green dial and bezel. And you can get it on the green rubber. And that was really, really good on wrist.
That was my low-key favorite, I think, release. For a couple of reasons. I mean, obviously people have been calling it sort of Omega's take on the Hulk. So if we're going to go down that route, I guess we'll call this one the David Banner, the Lou Ferrigno iteration of the Hulk from the famous 70s TV show that nobody's listening to this podcast has watched. But it's great. I mean, it looks, there's actually something very subtle about that watch that I don't know many people have picked up on, but there are no red accents on the dial. which I think lends to a much more balanced look. It's a look that Omega has only put on its two-tone iterations of that model so far, and also, I guess, titanium or otherwise. And I think it just sings that way. You know, the white dial text, the lack of the red accent on the seconds hand, you just have this sort of complete piece of a watch in a color that, frankly, has never existed on that reference. And I do appreciate the fact that it's something of a muted green. You know, I love the blue Seamaster as much as anybody, but I think in the modern version of that watch, the blue has taken on kind of a, I don't know, it's a little bit too blue. You know, it's lost its subtlety. And I think that the green kind of recaptures that effect.
The thing that stands out for me about the green, especially if someone's going to compare it to the Hulk, which doesn't make that much sense to me, all things considered, but the color is deeper. So it's kind of like less iridescent than like a Hulk color. But then the other side is that it's a ceramic dial. So the shininess of everything matches.
Right.
So you don't have a matte element and a bright green element that changes. And like if you're in that one lighting scenario, that the whole color is the same. And in lower light and in a shadow, it looks black. It looks like a standard Seamaster. And then it grabs the light and it's this like deep grassy green color. It's really nice.
Yeah. And to go to Nick's point, again, rubber strap from Omega. I mean, what they do with these is the straps kind of contour naturally. A, they feed into the case almost like an integrated rubber strap, but it's just like a totally different rubber strap quotient. I feel like it's comfortable. It's soft. It's rubber. It's not, they're not calling it a bracelet. They're not saying it's something else than it is. It doesn't have some sort of deployant clasp. It just sort of is a rubber strap. And obviously any buyer's preference, I think, would be to buy a watch like that on steel and then opt for rubber later, which is something I would 100% do with a watch like that. It's killer. I feel like it was a piece that they didn't, I would imagine, wasn't their high watermark piece for the year in any way, given what's already been released. But I think it's going to be another sleeper, to Nick's point.
You know, they spoke about how the previous Bond, the titanium Bond for No Time to Die, was one of the most popular SKUs in terms of its impressions in the market and then in actual orders. And the green, like I said, is not like a frog green or like viper green or something like that. It's this really chill palette. I think it's going to prove to be like a really popular one.
Yeah.
And now I'm just embarrassed. I didn't notice that it didn't have the red text. That didn't clip to me. Nicely pegged.
Sure. You know, well, I'm holding, there's a review that's coming with me with a different watch, but as a comparison, this is great for podcasting, me showing something. I have the blue Bond Seamaster, the modern one. And I do love how this watch wears. I think it's deceivingly, it wears much smaller. And I hate saying this. This is like classic watch writer thing. It wears smaller than its 42 millimeter diameter would suggest. And so, but that's true. And it has less to do with diameter and more to do with lug to lug. And I just think it's a great modern watch. Omega tapped into a design in the 90s that has turned into a classic that I don't think any other watch brand can look to the 90s and say, yeah, our lasting watch, our sort of core diver came from the 90s. It just doesn't happen. And it's a really testament to just sort of how avant-garde this watch and funky it kind of is. From the bracelet to the case to the conical helium escape valve situation. I mean, there's a lot going on. And I can't wait to see the green. Just honestly can't wait.
I'm a broken record on this, but I would love to see one with sword hands, like the 2254. I get the Bond hand. It's lasted. The 2254 didn't, but I would love, just make one or two with the sword hand. Just so I know, I'll just do it in Photoshop. It's okay.
You good, James?
Yeah, I'm okay. I'm not butthurt. It's fine.
There was some chatter about the date windows on the AT not matching the color of the dial. If you are the sort of person who's really upset by that, check out the Seamaster where the date window does match the dial.
You know, I like to harp on a bad date. I think the AT's dates are very successful. I like the 34 because it has a little frame. It's finished with a border, whereas the 38 millimeter models are more of like a hard sort of surgical square cut. If it was next to a marker, I would want it to be the same color so it would kind of hide, but it takes the exact position of a marker at 6 o'clock. So I think there's a lot of balance there. And if it was the same color, you'd need a marker there as well. And I think it would start to mess up. I think they made the right choice on that one. You can never please everyone with dates ever, forever. It's impossible. But I think they did just fine on that. And then talk about pleasing people who wanted a smaller, thinner Speedy. We've got a brand new generation of the Speedy 57. It's hand wound. It's thinner. It's even thinner than a Moonwatch by about 2 or 3 tenths of a millimeter. New fully massaged bracelet design, again, with the extension in the clasp. 4 colorways, but they're maintaining the sort of black tan sandwich dial with and still the date as well with the sandwich dial. I was never a 57 guy because I didn't like the way it sat on my wrist. It was kind of a big, kind of a tall watch for its width, and it kind of sat up on its case back. And these, especially on the, they had them on a, you have a, an option of a leather strap, which of course is easier for photos like we discussed. And it, just a really comfortable watch with a nice sort of dial shape that accepts a lot of light. So sometimes a sandwich dial gets really shadowy because there's so much depth away from the top of the crystal. But they did the they did a nice job with that. I think it'll speak again. We have a story coming eventually, and it'll speak in the photos. Any preference one way or another? This, you know, people used to love the FOIS, the First Omega in Space, and then of course you have Moonwatch. Where would you even go now? Because the pricing, the delta in the price isn't that crazy.
Well, that's where I was going to go first. Was this kind of feels, especially with the decrease in size, like it takes the place of the First Omega in Space a little bit. Whereas that watch was definitively, you know, a modern version of a vintage watch, where this one feels more like a modern watch with intense vintage cues, not dissimilar to the Seamaster 300s that came out last year, which again, we're seeing some design consistency, sandwich dial there, sandwich dial here. In practical terms, the sandwich dial, at least the way that I've seen it on the 300s, can be a little bit difficult in terms of legibility, to your point, shadows, but also it doesn't pop quite as much, especially when you're using this sort of, vintage effect loom that Omega uses on the watches. But overall, I think this is a great piece. I've always thought that the Speedmaster 57 was sort of like an oddball speedy. I never really ever considered it, and mostly for the size, and also because I looked at it and with the way that it was designed, it made no sense to be in that size. And now everything kind of adds up.
Only offered in steel, black, green, burgundy, or blue. I really like the blue. They have they put a black sort of surround, but it's integrated into the color. It's not like a separate ring on the two subdials. So you do get some change in the way that the contrast goes in terms of legibility. And 12.9 millimeters, so 12.99 millimeters thick, 50 meters water resistance. That's in like most of the speedies. And they're hitting in about 8,300 on a strap, 86 on a bracelet. So you definitely want the bracelet for $300. The bracelet's one of the things that kind of impressed me the most about it.
Is it not the same bracelet as the 3861? It's different.
Yeah, it's a flat link. So it's the Ed White style bracelet.
Okay.
And it has, well, now the gold 3861 has the extent. Basically all, it seems like almost every bracelet. Did you see a bracelet, Nick, that didn't have the extension in it?
No, and those extensions are really handy. I wear a vintage Omega Dynamic that supposedly has micro adjustments, but it's not something that I can easily do with one thumb. Those micro adjustments are pretty sweet.
It's great, especially you go from New York to Miami. Your wrist is not going to be the same time when you go for a walk or, you know, after a run or something like that. And to have, it's 2.3 millimeters of extension. So it's not a wetsuit extension. It's not like they're repurposing something more considerable. And I think in the 2.3, I think it's six positions. That's a lot of granularity.
Yeah, it's significant. And it, you know, going to the jeweler to get a link taken out or added in, who wants to do that?
Or destroying one of your own links when you do it yourself, like me.
Yeah, that kind of push button micro adjustment is like a really generous piece of design.
Because I think a lot of brands do get away without, and Omega probably could too, but it seems like something that they're going to commit to. I think the hand wound movement is cool on aesthetics alone. You flip it over and it has this beautiful, so the finishing comes from the center point of the escapement, not from the center of the movement. So it's a pretty nice effect. And it's another one where the movement fills the watch quite nicely. So you can see all of the movement and it looks appropriate to the size of the watch. So
that's important.
So those are all of the new announcements that we're kind of going to focus on for the show. A pretty wide range there, from crazy deep diving watches to, you know, vintage style chronographs, wearable, everyday, colorful, you know, beautiful watches like the AT. And then that green Seamaster, which I think I might agree with Danny, might be the sleeper among the lot, because it is just a colorway, but it's just one that they executed so nicely. If you had to pick one to wear for 6 months, and that's what you're going to wear for 6 months, so that's going to take you through summer, what of these would you want to kick around in? We'll be posting on Instagram and such.
I know where Nick's going, and I'm not going to go there. So I'm going green Seamaster, because I truly, truly believe that I might be able to wear that for 6 years. So I think 6 months wouldn't be too difficult.
If I were to borrow something for 6 months and wear it all summer, I'd go gold on gold on gold with the Speedy. But the truth is, if I were going to buy something with my own money, I'd get a 34 millimeter AT in a heartbeat. I really would.
Which color spoke to you the most?
Well, there's one that's kind of silverish that I think is the most elegant. But you were talking about the red earlier, and the red is really special. It's more a question of whether you want to stand out or blend in. But the
right.
The elegance of that silver is pretty hard to beat. And I tend not to have many pieces that blend in. And I actually think that the 34 millimeter in that silver tone.
Yeah, it's like a sandy, creamy sort of grayish color. It's beautiful for sure.
Yeah, that's the way I'd go with my own. If I were spending your money, I'd get the gold one. If I were spending my own money, I'd get the silver.
I want to revise my answer based on new rules that Nick Marino introduced into this game, because it would stay this. I'm just going to add on to it. It would stay the same either way. I would spend your money on the Green Seamaster, and I'd spend my money on it, which is cool. I am tempted by the gold on gold every day of the week. That watch just sings to me, but I wear my watches pretty hard, I would say, thoughtlessly, you might even say. I have scratched and dinged sapphire crystal on more than one occasion. I think I would look just cooler on a Green Seamaster.
Yeah, I can't say that I disagree in any way about the statement about gold and how I wear it. All of my gold watches are out for service currently and have been for quite some time. And these are vintage pieces, so you could definitely treat a modern Speedmaster a little harder. But it's just the nature of kind of the metal and me not maybe not modifying my lifestyle that much for a softer, more expensive sort of metal. But yeah, I think I would go with Nick if it was something I'm being loaned for 6 months or whatever. I'd check out the gold Speedmaster, and I'd see if they toss the bracelet and the rubber in the box and try both, because I think it's just a sweet thing. But that's not necessarily realistic. And I think if I was being realistic, I think I'd have to go with the Green Seamaster as well, Danny. I just dig it, especially on the rubber. That's one, like, I'm not crazy about the Bond bracelet. You know, I like the Speedy style bracelet on Seamaster. That's what I had on my 2254. But I think this on the rubber, I think it's also kind of me, because it's kind of fun and a little bit different, but like not necessarily fancy or shiny. And I think that could work pretty well. And I could jump off docks all summer with that on for sure.
So Nick, are you approving 6 months on the wrist? Is this a new,
a new rubric? Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I mean, having said all of that about what we would personally wear, to me, there's no question that the star of the show, the big achievement is the Ultra. You know, that's the one that people should actually go see to just behold it. That's sort of its own case as to what I personally would wear, you know, with my money or anyone else's, and what the real achievement here is. The real achievement is the Ultra Deep.
And I think like we said, and this is, I think, the point we can probably finish on, but I do think that there's something to be said for how hard Omega is pushing the technical aspect of what they do. We've already talked about the styling, the color, and all of that, but whether it's the movement designs and anti-magnetism and you know, all these sorts of elements, or it's making a case a little bit thinner, there's a technical challenge there, especially still doing a sandwich dial, right? And then on the other side with the Ultra Deep, it's having something like a showcase, I think, is such a classic way of thinking about luxury watches, right? That's not every brand's operating this way. And I'm kind of happy, especially as like a diehard dive watch nerd, a kid that loves submarines and underwater exploration and the rest of it, that one, that they supported Vescovo. And on top of it, now they've decided to make something, and I think they found a balancing act to take something so crazy and then make it kind of both distinctive within the Planet Ocean's range, but also still wearable if you're the type who would want to watch like that. People who want 6,000 meter dive watches, 3,000 meter dive watches, aren't counting every millimeter typically.
I also think it's important that they introduce it inside of the Planet Ocean line, and that it lends itself so much to the general design language, because I could see a kid who's interested in submarines or interested in diving walking into a boutique and seeing this sort of on display with maybe a booklet or some kind of signage that explains what it is, and never really wanting maybe that watch. That stuff is so important to watch marketing. And I know it's not necessarily marketing, because there is real achievement behind it, but you to be able to promote it effectively, that's storytelling. That is something that nobody will ever forget. That's how you sort of get somebody into a brand universe and keep them there. And kudos to Omega for doing that.
The halo effect is real. You know, that in much the same way that none of us are going to space with a Speedy either. But that's an important part of the brand storytelling because it indicates what they are capable of. And that's part of why we want to wear.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. But like you think of something like a Seiko Tuna, even a very expensive Tuna with an 8L series movement, that's a $3,000 or $4,000 watch. You're telling me that the existence of that and being on the same page as the $800 one, or there's a baby Tuna with a quartz that's like very reasonably priced. I guarantee that there's a trickle down effect from that where people fall in love with the top spec, a Deep Sea, an Ultra Deep, a Tuna, a Zin U1, and then they buy the one that either fits their budget or their wrist or whatever. But one kind of speaks, you know, to the general quality rather than the specificity, which I think is probably where the value is for something like the Ultra Deep. All right, guys, I think we did it. I think that's going to do it for Omega. Obviously, we have a lot planned when it comes to the show. When we all land in Geneva and we can record every day is the goal. So consider subscribing just because we're going to start delivering those. They're not going to come at like a fixed schedule. It'll be when they're ready to go up. But we want to be able to have basically an episode that kind of captures every day at the show, what it was like, what was fun, what was kind of challenging, you know, how tired we are, whatever it is, right? How many Diet Cokes we've had for the $50 budget or whatever I have a day for Diet Cokes. I'm still getting that approved with Nick. But yeah, guys, thanks so much for being on. Nick, Danny, it's always a treat to have you guys on. And Nick, it was great to go down and check out some novelties with you. It felt like old days in the watch world. So I'm glad you're getting a taste of it.
I'll see you guys soon in Switzerland.
See you in Geneva, boys.
Okay, and to everyone else, thank you so much for listening. It's always a treat to do these. And we'll chat to you in about a week's time with another topic.